Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention, with your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper.
All right, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Copper. We've got a great show for you tonight. ADHD and dyslexia coexisting conditions and their impact. And with us in our virtual studio is Dr. Roberto Olivardia and guest host, Caroline McGuire. It's fascinating because the Attention Talk Network, when we find a good guest and a good topic, there's often a fight over who gets to interview the person. And Caroline McGuire won tonight, much to my dismay, because this is a great topic that's near and dear to my heart. But quite honestly, she ended up doing the interview and it was spectacular. If you haven't determined by now, in the way I'm explaining this, is that this was actually a pre-recorded interview due to Dr. Olivardi's schedule. Really quickly, tonight is Wednesday, July the 6th in the year 2016 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Got a few announcements. One, Dr. Barclay's asked us to promote ADHDfund.com, which is a crowdsourcing website to raise money for small-scale research worldwide. Also, what's near and dear to my heart and should be near and dear to yours is the 2016 Annual International Conference on ADHD. Chad puts this on. This year, it's in let me back up. CHAD stands for Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, which is the largest not-for-profit organization that advocates on behalf of those with ADHD. Their annual conference is coming up November the 10th through the 12th in Costa Mesa, California. You can learn more about that event by going to chadd.org. I want to be kind of clear with this. I am a big fan of CHAD because I think a healthy CHAD is a healthy ADHD community. We need somebody to speak on the on behalf of the ADHD community, and that's what they do. We've done many, many shows about their advocacy. One of my favorites was there's sometimes ADHD medication shortages, and we had Ruth Hughes, who is the president of CHAD at the time, talk about that. Was fascinating because you would think it's drug companies or pharmacy companies that create that, but it actually is our own government. So we're a big fan for them, and we're actually kind of starting something a little new, and that is tonight's show is actually being brought to you by CHAD. And so if you will just bear with us, they've got a tip for you tonight that we'd like to share. So here we go.
Did you know that more than 3,000 people died in distracted driving accidents last year? As a driver with ADHD, you're at higher risk for distracted driving and car accidents, particularly during long distance and highway driving. Here are some tips. Keep your cell phone turned off or out of reach. Limit the number of passengers. Use music or a book on tape to help you focus. Receive proper treatment. For more information, visit the CHAD website, chad.org, or helpforadhd.org. That's chadd.org or HELP, the number 4, ADHD.org.
Again, we'd like to thank CHAD for their continued support of us. I think we've had a relationship with them for 5.5 years, which really kind of goes both ways. I can't speak enough. They are a non-profit organization. They stand for supporting you out there. If you're not a member, you should be, for no other reason than to give them money so that they can speak on our behalf to Congress and advocate. But it's also some really great things. You get magazines, you get some of their forums and a lot of tips. So with that, let's get into the meat of tonight's show. I am dyslexic. We've done a couple shows on dyslexia over the years. And Dr. Olivardia tonight, I think you'll find his comments very insightful. Caroline does a great job of walking him through this particular conversation. And I really I think it's kind of fascinating because those with ADHD and dyslexia are particularly challenged by both. If they can find the right treatment and the right structures, many of them can be exceptionally successful, which is the great news. But we're going to roll the tape here. We certainly hope you enjoy the show, and I can guarantee you'll learn something. I'm kind of chomping the bit because I want to give you some previews, but I won't because you need to listen to the interview. So here we go.
Hello, welcome to the show tonight. We have a wonderful guest tonight, Dr. Roberto Olivardia. And Dr. Roberto Olivardia is a clinical instructor in psychology at Harvard Medical School. He has a private psychotherapy practice in Lexington, Massachusetts, right down the street from me. He is specializing in treatment of ADHD, body dysmorphic disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, and eating disorders in boys and men. He is the co-author of The Adonis Complex that details various manifestations of body image problems in men. And he has taught at the University of Massachusetts, Boston, Boston College, and speaks at conferences around the country where a lot of us have been lucky enough to hear him. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Caroline.
Well, Dr. Olivardia, I saw an article that you wrote in Attention Magazine, and I know that you have been on Chronicle last week about dyslexia, and I've read other articles you've written, and I was so attracted to this article, not just because I am a dyslexic, but because you chronicled, you know, just so many interesting things about attention and dyslexia, and then you shared some really, really touching stuff about your son that I could relate to, as my little girl is also dyslexic and she's 7. So I just wanted to start off, can you give us a little bit of broader information about what is dyslexia and, just painting a picture for our listeners?
Sure. So first, I'll give you the formal definition that's set forth by the International Dyslexia Association, and this is verbatim, that dyslexia is a specific learning disability that is neurobiological in origin. It is characterized by difficulties with accurate and or fluent word recognition, poor spelling, and decoding abilities. These difficulties typically result from a deficit in the phonological component of language that is often unexpected in relation to other cognitive abilities and the provision of effective classroom instruction, and secondary consequences may include problems in reading comprehension and reduced reading experience that can impede growth of vocabulary and background knowledge. That's the official definition. What we will see, though, in people with dyslexia are phonemic, what we mean by phonemic awareness is that when we see letters, there are symbol sound associations. So the letter T has a T sound. So every time we would see the letter T, that sound would sort of come out of our mouths. Our brain would process that. For people with dyslexia, it can be very difficult. They might not have that sort of automatic relationship with those sounds. So if you imagine when you see the word cat, that is actually broken down into small units of sound. You have k, a, t, and then the brain eventually puts cat together. For someone with dyslexia, if recognizing the C as a k and the A as an a and the T as a t are all challenges, then the whole word is going to be even more of a challenge. Then you put words in a sentence, you're going to have even more of a challenge, sentences into paragraphs and so on. In addition, with dyslexia, you might see what's called segmentation issues. So, for example, the word teacher, we would break up as teacher. Now, someone with dyslexia might see teacher, and then it's teaker, which is a totally different word. So it's almost like those natural segments that people would make with words are very difficult for people with dyslexia. Issues with rhyming, visual tracking issues, and just very poor automaticity of sight words. Like there are just certain common words, like the word the. And as you mentioned, I have an 11-year-old son who has dyslexia, and one of the first signs for me was in kindergarten. I mean, other than that learning disabilities and ADHD run in my side of the family, and the learning issues also run on the side of my wife's family, but he would see the word the and struggle with the word the, and then literally 3 words later would be the word the again, and he wouldn't recognize it. And this is, again, despite the fact that he had an excellent verbal ability, excellent vocabulary, that it was very unexpected for what we would see. And a lot of times it's what's called speeded naming deficits, being able to sort of name either specific objects, like saying, you know, how many red objects can you think about, or, again, words that you would just automatically know, like the word of, O-F. You wouldn't say off it's of. You just kind of have to memorize it. And those things are very, very tough for people with dyslexia. And then you have fluency of, so even if somebody can decode the words, it's then how fluent can they read them and how well can they comprehend it. So dyslexia is not the same thing in any individual. And despite what popular TV movies in the past have shown, it is not reading words backwards. Now, granted, sometimes letters can get transposed and people might confuse B's and P's and things like that, absolutely, but it is not seeing words in mirror images. That's not the majority of people with dyslexia.
Oh, that's an excellent way of putting it. And I like that you have that also. In many of the publications I've read by you, you demystify that or debunk that, because that is what people think. And, I think the example you gave is really a great example that parents can relate to, because I remember, I don't remember being a dyslexic kid very well, but I know when I was with my own daughter, that's exactly what it was. And I was thinking to myself, we just did this, you know? So I think that's a great example. And you mentioned also attention. I mean, I can hear a lot of different ways in which this all sort of manifests. But, you know, there is a pretty significant overlap between folks who have ADHD and folks who have dyslexia. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. What I always tell people is that if you have been diagnosed with ADHD or dyslexia, you should automatically get assessed for the other, because about 50 to 60% of people with ADHD have a learning disability, which dyslexia is the most common of those learning disabilities. And even when I say learning disabilities, what we're really saying is more of a learning difference, because when you can intervene and you can teach a child the way that they need to be taught, it's not a disability. I mean, dyslexia is not hazardous to one's health inherently. What becomes hazardous is the lack of identifying it and the lack of teaching it. And unfortunately, a lot of school systems are not equipped to sort of handle that and deal with that. So you have 50 to 60% of people with ADHD that have these learning differences, of which 80% of those learning differences are people with dyslexia. And in the dyslexic population, it's less clear how many people have ADHD. Some studies say it could be 20 to 30% of people with dyslexia have ADHD, but the overall prevalence rate of dyslexia has been said to be anywhere from 15 to 18% is sort of the most common standard prevalence rate of individuals have dyslexia, which is very common. It's actually, for something that's that common, it's astounding that it's so misunderstood and unidentified. And so when you have that level of an overlap, it should absolutely be assessed, because if you have ADHD with dyslexia, they will absolutely impact each other. And it's very easy, as I've talked with Jeff Copper a lot about other shows that he and I have done, that it's very easy when you get diagnosed with one thing that the issues that might actually be related to the other condition get assumed to be part of the first one. So for people who get diagnosed with ADHD, who might have also dyslexia, or sometimes don't even have the ADHD, they just have dyslexia, parents might hear from teachers, well, no, I don't think they have dyslexia. It's because of their ADD. They're not able to pay attention and focus on the words, and they're skipping around the page. And yes, sometimes people with ADHD do that. However, if you just have ADHD and you actually have a child read words, they're able to read them. They might get bored very easily reading the words, but their ability to read it is intact. And similarly, I've worked with people who are diagnosed with dyslexia who have not been diagnosed with ADHD, and people assume, no, they don't have ADD. It's because the dyslexia is so energy expending that they find it very difficult to focus. And dyslexia does burn a lot of energy, and it is very cognitively effortful to read. But if someone also has ADHD, it's going to make that dyslexia even much more of a bigger animal to deal with. So it should always be, anytime somebody has one, I always say you should just get assessed for the other.
So this animal to deal with, let's talk about that. You know, I was saying to you, I won't name the school because I don't have permission, but the day I read this article, I came home from a school, and mm-hmm. I had been watching a bunch of kids, and, you know, they were getting remediation for the dyslexia, but the attention issues, you know, who knows, chicken or egg, you know, maybe mm-hmm. better than I, but there was, it was such an issue. You could just tell that the attention was such an issue. So tell me about this idea, because I think any parent who's listening, you know, is going to relate to this.
Absolutely. And it is, it can be a very, very tricky thing because both ADHD and dyslexia have many similarities. I mean, both populations have issues with information processing speed, with working memory deficits, with naming speed, motor skills issues, or time perception. So a lot of these times, you know, people who, again, just might get diagnosed with one, it's very understandable why people might assume it's just that condition. But actually, there are differences, you know, that are very important to sort of sift through and make sure that it's very clear that, okay, is this just an attention-related issue, or does this person actually have an issue decoding words? So, for example, with reading, so people with ADHD might have a hard time reading through something that's unstimulating for them, which is why I never read a book in high school. And even reading the Cliff Notes was really, really boring, so I couldn't even read through the Cliff Notes because my attention was just not good when it came to those books. And in addition, looking back, I am probably on the dyslexic end myself, and just knowing the genetics that, I mean, my wife also in her side of the family, has that present in their side as well. But you also have people with ADHD who, if it's they're interested, they can really whip through comic books or, you know, Harry Potter books or things that are really of interest to them. There isn't an issue in terms of decoding the words, in terms of comprehending. With dyslexia, how you could be as interested in it as anything in the world, it's not going to make a difference. Your ability to read through that material is not going to be any quicker because it's an issue with all of those kind of phonological processing. You know, a lot of times, too, it's very important that when you see, let's say, kids who might be one or the other, might be fidgeting or might have a hard time sort of grounding themselves. Now, sometimes with ADHD, we know that people with ADHD need to fidget for that sort of frontal lobe stimulation. But for people with dyslexia, that fidgeting could be because they're exhausted almost. They feel this real fatigue at reading through. With the person with ADHD, sometimes if you change the environment for them, sometimes even just standing up as opposed to sitting down or reading outside versus inside, then you're going to see the problem disappear. For dyslexia, it doesn't matter, you know, what environment you put them in. The other thing is that with spelling, people with dyslexia tend to be very, very poor spellers because they tend to spell phonetically. So when my son writes an essay or something for school, it can be very difficult to someone who either doesn't have dyslexia or understand that to read it because it just looks, but I completely can read it because it's all phonetic. I mean, you just write, you know, in a lot of ways, I mean, I think, why shouldn't we? I mean, shouldn't we write this way? I mean, it would be so much easier if we just wrote the way that things actually sounded. So people with dyslexia spell literally how things sound. So the word knock would not be K-N-O-C-K because there's no K sound in the, so you would write N-O-C-K. That's how knock would be written. So spelling, whereas with ADHD, the poor spelling tends to be more of a function of impulsivity. So kids with ADHD might misspell words, but then when you say, okay, wait a minute, pause, take a moment and tell me, how do you spell caterpillar or how do you spell knock? And for the most part, as a group, you'll see that they don't have that same problem with spelling. Whereas with dyslexia, the poor spelling is very phonetically driven. With ADHD and dyslexia, you'll often see, and this is definitely the case with my son, who has excellent audio, and he has ADHD as well, but he definitely, this is not for me, because I'm very poor, with the exception of interpersonal conversations, I'm very poor at audio processing. Like, it was very difficult in classes that were just lecture-driven classes, in which it was not seminar-based, to really, like, pay attention, follow. Like, books on tape, I tried. I can't really sort of follow long books. Whereas a lot of people with dyslexia without the ADHD are excellent processing. And part of it may be that are they that way because they're compensating for, you know, knowing that maybe they're going to have a hard time reading through something, so I better really pay attention to that. And what we know about the brain is that there are neurological differences, that ADHD involves the prefrontal cortex, and with dyslexia involves totally different parts of the brain, you know, parts of the occipital temporal lobe and the parietal temporal lobe, where word analysis and word formation really appear. So they sort of light up in kind of different areas, and different genes and chromosomes are sort of associated, but they are both heritable, very heritable conditions. So if you have ADHD, you know, it could have up to a 70% heritability rate, that if you're a parent, if you are someone with ADHD, there's a 70% chance you'll have a child with it. With dyslexia, if you have dyslexia, there's about a 50% chance you'll have a child with dyslexia. So there is a lot of commonalities between them, but the main thing for people who are getting, like, neuropsych testing is try to have the tester try to screen out reading tests or surveys that screen out for sort of attentional demands, because you want to almost kind of try to get a sense of how that child reads when there isn't a big attentional focus. So where it's not timed, where you're really trying to get a sense of how they break down words, versus if you're timing them, you might have a kid that might look like they don't read well, but it's because maybe they're ADHD, they're just impulsive or anxious because they're being timed, and really trying to screen out, like, how well they are at reading and decoding those words and reading fluently.
That's excellent. This is such excellent information. We have to take a break, but I just want to recap a couple of things. First of all, this is absolutely a wonderful show for Attention Talk Radio, because we haven't done this before where we really talk about these things, and I think it's really important, a lot of the information you're sharing about the difference, because so often, you cited this in some of the things you've written, parents are told, oh, everybody will catch up.
Mm-hmm.
And so they think, well, do I really push? You know, I have this problem. I don't want to put it on my kid. But you're really giving us some good things to look for so that parents can say, well, wait a minute. Here's the theme, you know, mm-hmm. and they can go to the educators. When we come back, I would love to hear more about what you're doing in terms of your recent testimony on Capitol Hill, and I love the stories you've told about your son, so I'd love to tap into that a little bit.
Sure.
We are on with Dr. Roberto Olivardia. He is not only a foremost expert in this topic, but also has a private practice. If you want to reach him and send him an email, you can definitely do so. And I'm going to spell this out for everybody. It's Roberto, R-O-B-E-R-T-O, _ Olivardia, O-L-I-V-A-R-D-I-A, @ HMS, as in Harry, Mary, Sally, .harvard.edu. And we will be right back with more.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an EDGE Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more, or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to ADDCA.com and click on Find a Coach.
If you think you understand attention so well, then why are you struggling so much with it? Attention is as simple as it is complex to understand. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. It's grossly misunderstood. Consider this. Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution. In our new ebook, we'll share 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download our ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start understanding and managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is your guest host, Caroline McGuire, and I am here with Dr. Roberto Olivardia. Dr. Olivardia, you wrote about something that I really think is powerful for parents. Before the break, you told us a lot about dyslexia and its relationship to ADHD. And then there's another piece that parents face, which is, when a kid gets a diagnosis, all the research shows that talking to them at their developmental level is really important. And you addressed something else in this article that I read. You said you prepared your son to sort of face people's misconceptions. And I thought it was really touching because a lot of parents have said this to me over the years, and it's so true. People say things that I think to myself, you said that to a kid? But they do. And I think you did it in a really beautiful way. Do you mind describing it?
Sure. I think it's one of the things, of course, as a parent, you don't want your child to feel inferior. And we often think of the word different as being an automatic state of inferiority, and it's not. So parents might say, I don't want my child to feel different by using the word dyslexia. Or, parents will say, oh, I don't want to use the D word. And, of course, every parent is doing it with the right intentions, but what I say to them is, your child is different. I mean, they are different, but let's not define different as a bad thing. Let's not have the culture and schools or society or whoever define different as a bad thing. And studies actually do show this, that a number of studies, interestingly, most of them have been done in the UK, that have shown that when a child is given the word dyslexia as opposed to learning disability, specific learning disability, which are used in individualized education plans in many parts of the U.S., which in Massachusetts we're fighting against, that studies show that the word dyslexia is associated with more global self-esteem. It is not a shaming word because it helps them understand and give them a context of, oh, okay, so I'm not stupid, I'm not uneducable, I have this thing, and this is how, and depending on how you frame it to your child, in the same ways that there are many podcasts and lectures about how ADHD can be explained to people, that there is a lot of research about this. And, my son, so he was diagnosed right before first grade, and we are obsessed with the show Shark Tank. We love Shark Tank. And my son wants to be, he probably will be an entrepreneur because he just has that way about him. Now, 3 of the sharks on Shark Tank are dyslexic, and that was very helpful. It is helpful for children to know of people, just like in the ADHD community. It's very important to know there are lots of very successful people with ADHD. So one of the things I did, because when he was diagnosed with dyslexia, and I was sitting with my wife saying, I said, we'll get him whatever reading interventions he needs. Like, that was, it's important, obviously, but the most important thing for me, and certainly, and my wife, was how his self-esteem is going to fare. I don't want him to think he's stupid, because he's clearly not, and his testing, shows that. And I don't want him to sort of be affected by other people's misperceptions. So, we have an individualized education plan, which is known as an IEP, and I developed this sort of this thing called an IPP, or an ignorance protection plan, which basically is set up to help the child basically expect that they are going to get certain negative criticisms and prepare them for it. And this was something that sometimes when I've talked about this, parents are like, oh, they cringe when they hear this. But I, first grade, I said to my son, look, you know, this is, you have this thing called dyslexia. And, you know, the ADHD had already been talked about. I mean, I have ADHD. I come from a family of lots of people with ADHD. But the learning disabilities wasn't necessarily diagnosed, but that's clear in, you know, part myself and members of my family as well. And I said, it's a thing called dyslexia, and people don't understand it. They think they know what it is, but they don't know what it is. And unfortunately, people are going to think you're stupid, but you're not. And we know you're not stupid because I don't even need the testing to prove to me that you're not stupid, but I can show you that in this testing, it shows how smart you are. He scored in the 99th percentile in verbal comprehension and in vocabulary. I said, so people are going to think, because people unfortunately think that good readers are smart people, and all smart people are good readers, and that's not the case. I said, so let's pretend that somebody comes up to you and says, you don't know how to read. And I also said to him, too, that most people are not malicious about this, that a lot of people will just genuinely be surprised that he is dyslexic because, again, of people's misperceptions that, oh, wow, you speak so clearly and
right.
you speak with such articulation and you have such great vocabulary. Like, how are you a poor reader? I said, they're going to be more surprised. So first is don't take it as malice at first, although there are people that can be bullies about it, but most people are just going to be surprised. So let's say that someone says, oh, you can't read, like, what would you say? And we role-played it. And then we
Wonderful.
Went into, what if somebody says, gosh, you're stupid because you need those reading services, or because you're dumb. And, you know, and I acted the role. I mean, I didn't sugarcoat it, because it's very likely that that could happen. And what could you say? You know, we went back and forth and back and forth. So I mean, it was one of those moments that I'll never forget as a parent, because, you know, you do all these things and you hope that it sort of sticks, and a lot of things
yep.
might not stick or it might take 30 years. Like, just now I'm realizing why my parents did certain things, you know, when I was younger. And it was literally about 2 weeks after I did that with him that he came. I was picking him up from school, and he came and he's like, Dad, we have this rule where we wait till we're in the car to, like, talk about, you know, certain things. And he says,
right.
let's get in the car. So we get in the car, and he said, I was in music class, and he's in first grade, so he's six. He's like, I was in music class, and we had to read the song, and the teacher passed out the words of the song. And when I mean, his dyslexia was severe. I mean, he was a non-reader in first grade. He's made a tremendous amount. He's in fifth grade now. He's made a tremendous amount of progress. We're doing, you know, well. We still, you know, we're still along the journey, but
right.
much, much better place than where he was in first grade. So he really could not read. He said, and I couldn't read the words. So I asked, and he mentioned this female classmate, if she could read the words with me. And sure enough, she said, what do you mean? You can't read that? Those are so easy, those words. And he said, and I remember what you said. And he goes, and I don't think she was being mean. I think she was just surprised. And I said to her, oh, I have dyslexia. It's this just way that my brain is wired that has trouble reading certain things and breaking down words. And actually, Walt Disney had dyslexia. And Steven Spielberg, who's a very – he made E.T., by the way. And he's – he has dyslexia. And he just went on his spiel, and she went, oh, okay. And she just read the words with him. And he said, and then they sang the song together once because he could memorize the words once they were said. And he felt so proud of himself that, and to me, that is a moment right there that his self-esteem could have been shattered. It does not take long, and people need to understand this. We could talk about the need for early identification and early intervention, because that moment could have been a very defining moment of, oh my gosh, I am stupid. This person thinks I'm stupid, and I must be stupid. And instead, he armed himself with that, and I felt just, oh my gosh, I was like, I couldn't even hold the tears back. So I really, really emphasize to parents, dyslexia is not a bad word. They're not going to feel shame, because these kids will feel more shame. They'll feel worse about themselves if they just think they're stupid, which is what they're going to feel if they don't have a context.
Oh, I love it. We have to take a break, but I love the IPP plan, Ignorance Protection Plan. I think that his sighting of Steven Spielberg and Walt Disney, imagine, it's so out of the mouth of Dave. And I also think when we come back, you know, I do want to touch on something that you talked about also, which is this idea of feeling different, that kids already know. Mm-hmm. That, you know, your son was so bright. He knew he couldn't read, just a bunch of things. And I think for parents listening, there's so much here about that idea of the shattering moment that turned into him feeling glorious about himself. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that girl will read anything he ever wants, ever, since he's going to be the next Steven Spielberg or one of the Shark Tank folks. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So, all right, we're going to go to a break. We'll be right back with Dr. Roberto Olivardia, and I'm going to attempt to go through his email address again if anyone wants to contact him. It's Roberto, R-O-B-E-R-T-O, _ Olivardia, O-L-I, V-A-R-D-I-A, at hmsharrymarysally.harvard.edu.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution, misunderstand attention, and you'll struggle with it. Get 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download the ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
We are here with Dr. Roberto Olivardia. This is Caroline McGuire, your guest host, and we are sharing a little bit of a love fest about being dyslexic. And, you know, Dr. Olivardia, you tell these great stories, and one of the things I love about it is that over the years, I have had kids get a diagnosis and literally say to me, thank God, I finally know what's going on.
Yeah.
And I know why parents are afraid. And of course, you know, they'll say to me, well, you're so out. You know, you're out there telling people about these different things in your brain. But, you know, I love the story with your son because, you know, people at the pet store make comments about stuff, people everywhere, and kids, you know, sometimes it's better if they know how to respond or they know that that person isn't being malicious, like you said, which I thought was a really nice way of putting it to your son. You mentioned before the break this idea that kids already know they're different. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. That I think, you know, you'll see this and hear this a lot with people with ADHD as well. And this is something that very much is a very similar experience that, you know, a lot of people with ADHD and dyslexia can sort of share this conversation and really feel like they're sort of the same tribe in some ways, because there is this sensibility that comes along with dyslexia, because other than even you know, issues with reading and things like that, that, you know, you also see these sort of ways of kind of interacting with the world, that you'll see a lot of very out-of-the-box kind of thinkers. It's no accident that many entrepreneurs are ADHD and or dyslexic, that, you know, they sort of see things in a very different way, that there is a way that your brain is processing information, even if something as basic as reading, but it goes even beyond reading. And these kids, what's so important And I cannot emphasize enough the importance of early identification and for parents to trust their instincts, because unfortunately, and I'm one of the least cynical people you'll meet, is that a lot of public school systems, they lean on not diagnosing it, because once you diagnose dyslexia, you then have to have teachers that are trained in the empirically derived interventions, and you don't see that a lot, and that costs money. But it's a longer-term cost if you don't educate the child, because you'll see that studies will show that high school dropouts, prisoners in prison, that there's a high rate of undiagnosed dyslexia as well as ADHD. So also, but more importantly, is we have this system that is just flawed, where it is a wait-to-fail system, that in the early grades we teach children how to read, and what you'll often see in fourth and fifth grade, and this is where I see the kids come into my therapy office, where private schools that specialize in education for dyslexic individuals, their highest entry-level rates are in fourth and fifth grade, because the curriculum goes from teaching people how to read to then they are learning to read to reading to learn. So now you have to learn social studies and science and word problems and math. You have to have a command of how to read. And that's when you start to see the dyslexia get diagnosed, because now it's not about Mary or John being a little bit of a slow reader. They can't even catch up, because the expectation is you're supposed to read 10 pages of social studies, and if you can barely get through a paragraph, and I have seen many people who are in fifth, sixth grade who have, when they actually get assessed for dyslexia, have first or second grade reading levels. First or second grade reading levels when they're in the fifth and sixth grade. But because their IQ is high or they're quite bright, they have compensated for it in ways, memorizing words. I mean, I have a client I'm working with now who literally has memorized words. So they're not actually decoding them. So they see the word, you know, Boston, for example, and they just memorize the word as like one unit. Their brain is not breaking it down. And
right.
Then when they're confronted with words that they haven't seen before, that's when they're going to run into problems, because you'll start to see, again, in fourth, fifth grade, that even the vocabulary words that are in fiction books and everything, there's a significant elevation of demand. So these kids, from a very young age, they do feel different, but we can define that for them appropriately, which is that they are not, it's not a bad different, but and to let them know that it is not their responsibility to navigate on how to be, how to educate themselves with this, that it is our responsibility as parents, and more importantly, the responsibility of educators to do the right thing. And you had mentioned earlier that my son and I actually, in the state of wonderful state of Massachusetts that I live in, there are two bills in the State House right now, House Bill 463 and Senate Bill 312. One is for mandatory early screening in kindergarten for dyslexia, because colleagues of mine at Children's Hospital have developed this 20-minute screening tool, not an MRI machine, it's not expensive, to screen, and with, I think it's 80% accuracy, could identify key markers of individuals who are at risk for dyslexia, which is amazing. I mean, it's not the $5,000 neuropsych assessment that you would typically need. Now,
right.
This is where the cynicism comes in, is when Dr. Nadine Gabb, who heads this research, went into schools in the Boston area and said, we can do this for free because we want to pilot this for free. And most schools said, oh, no, we can't have you come in here. Well, why? Because if you identify these kids, then we have to then educate them, and we don't have the services to do that in kindergarten. We have those services in, like, fourth, fifth grade. So basically when these kids fail, we have the services. And it's so flawed. And so I welcome for parents to just, if they suspect it, get it tested. Because best case scenario is that there are two best case scenarios. Either they don't have dyslexia at all, and maybe it was a function of something else, but it's still identified, or they have dyslexia and you've discovered it and now you can sort of work with it and identify it and help the child see themselves as just as good learners as people who don't have dyslexia.
Oh, you have been music to my ears. I am angry about the state house thing and the fact that they wouldn't use this diagnostic tool. But I think it's also good to talk about, even though I know you are not a cynical person, but I think it is good to talk about this so parents understand that when someone brushes you off and your mommy gut says, there's something wrong. This kid is highly verbal, but this kid can't read. This kid is way behind his peers. I know I had a moment with my daughter where it was like a ghost walking on my grave. I watched her in relation to her peers, and she was very young, like you said, not even, you know, first grade, and I thought, she's way behind.
Yeah.
And you know what? Moms have that moment. Dads have that moment all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And often we are not, you know, you're in this industry, I'm in this industry. We don't. Parents don't follow it because they're feeling like, oh, the principal told me it's okay. And
exactly.
So I love what you're saying because I think it's really important that parents know that get them tested, especially
and
knowing there's things that the school could be doing.
Absolutely. And I would also recommend getting the testing privately, even though I understand it is a financial cost, because the testing through the school isn't always comprehensive, and they don't give the very specific sort of precise tests that can really parse out. Schools are more likely to diagnose ADHD than they are dyslexia, because with ADHD, it does not require an IEP. It requires what's called a 504, which are accommodations that happen in the classroom, but the instruction is the same. For dyslexia, it is a different instruction. My son is in a separate classroom with other kids with dyslexia, and I live in a wonderful town where the public school that he's in actually has this as a service, and it's a wonderful, he's been doing great at it, and he's in the other classes for science and social studies, but his reading instruction is completely different than the non-dyslexic students. And that requires a certain level of services and a certain level of funds that a school has to have. And again, with schools, sometimes it is, you know, I've been in IEP meetings of some of my clients where schools have said, oh, well, we don't believe in dyslexia. I mean, it's outrageous. I'm like, what? Like, what? And or they'll say, well, you know, we don't really use that word. It's a specific no, it's not a specific learning disability. If you have diabetes, we call it diabetes. We don't call it a blood sugar dysregulation, or we don't call it, you know, this other term, this vague term. We call it what it is, because if you are diabetic, one of the treatments is insulin, and that is a treatment that has been empirically shown has helped people with diabetes. So why would we call it something other than what it is? Schools sometimes reject outside testing because they don't want to follow through. And then sometimes, and similar to what I told my son, I've, you know, met teachers who really want to understand, and just they're not educated themselves on dyslexia. I was talking to a teacher at the State House recently when in February, my son and I went for another testimony, and I came across a teacher who was so appreciative, and she said, you know what, in my teaching, and she teaches reading, she had 1 hour, it was half of one class devoted to dyslexia, to learning, to even understanding learning disabilities. And she is a reading teacher. Now, you would think as a reading teacher that you would have some more education on not only just normal literacy development, but also when things aren't so normal in the sort of mainstream path. She said, I didn't understand what it was, and now I understand what it is, and now I can tell parents differently. So sometimes it's not that people are being deceptive, it's just that they don't understand what it is, what dyslexia is. But please, parents, trust your gut, because there is, you know, the kids that I see in therapy who struggle with major self-esteem issues, with depression, with anxiety, with school avoidance. I mean, I worked with a kid a couple of years ago who just refused to go to school because his learning, he was severely dyslexic, and he was in the 7th grade, and when he was tested, had a 2nd grade reading level. Now imagine that when all your friends are reading Harry Potter and just have access to all this knowledge and information, and you know on one hand, or initially he knew he was smart, but he started to think he was stupid, and he would have panic attacks just even entering the school. So it was very difficult. I mean, you start to see those kind of issues, and they go beyond the academic self-esteem. It spills into their global self-esteem in terms of how effective and productive they can be in the world.
Oh, that's so true. And I think parents are really going to be grateful for this information. We have to stop, but I think there are probably 30 shows here that we could do. But thank you so much for your work and for going to campaign for this at the government level. Parents, you can reach Dr. Roberto Olivardia by his email, and, you know, really, we love Dr. Roberto Olivardia. We'll have him back. Thank you so much for your stories, and our best to your son, who I look forward to the day when I see him on Shark Tank.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, take care.